everyone, I'm Brian Conley of Hunters HD Gold, and you're listening to Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. This podcast takes a deep dive into what it takes to be a match director, manufacturer, sponsored shooter, or just an everyday shooter trying to win his or her first major. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. Welcome back to another episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. Today I'm sitting down with a good friend of mine, personal friend of mine, really, really good friend of mine, Luigi Lee. How you doing, brother?
I am doing fantastic, Ryan.
That's awesome. So we're here at Dragon's Cup.
Yes, we are.
And we got a lot of things going on. You decided to run for president of USPSA.
Off the bat, we're going off to the races.
Oh, we're going right. Might as well get started now because it's gonna, you know, we're here. But listen, before we even get into that, when did you even start shooting? How far back does this go for you?
USPSA or shooting in general?
Shooting in general.
Okay. I turned 21 and I bought a handgun.
Well, that was very direct. Why?
I have no idea. I don't remember.
Don't remember why?
Because I turned 21 and I was allowed to.
Okay. Was guns in the house growing up?
Never.
There was just something that was just anti, or just not part of the, not part of the family, or just what was that? What do you know? Was, you know? What do you mean?
Indifferent.
Indifferent.
Nothing anti-gun. Right. Nothing for guns. It was just like we didn't have guns.
Right. So at 21, you went and bought a gun.
I went to Bass Pro Shops.
Right.
And I spent $700 on a 25th anniversary Beretta M9.
Okay. You remember exactly what it was, but you don't remember why.
Yes. Because okay. I turned 21,
right,
and I saw the Bass Pro Shop, like, you know, thing, and it said right. $699, 25th anniversary, military, U.S. Army,
right,
sidearm.
Right.
It's beautiful blue.
Right.
Polished walnut, smooth grips with a pewter inlay that says 25th.
Wow.
Yeah.
So as that being your very first gun, where did you go shoot it for the first time?
Upstairs at Bass Pro Shops.
Is that a gun range?
Yeah.
What state is this in?
Florida.
Okay.
Yeah, the one over in Dania. And you've been there.
Is that Bass Pro Shop?
Yeah. Upstairs, they have an archery range and a few stall, like, indoor 25-yard.
I don't remember that one at all. So that's pretty cool. Did you, when you went up there to go shoot, was there anybody to help you? Was there any kind of, just went up there and bought some ammo right there on spot and went to go shoot?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
What was that like for you when you first pulled the trigger? What was the feelings?
So I did the CCW class.
Before or after class?
I did the CCW class before I turned 21.
Okay.
So I sent in all the paperwork when I turned 21, and then I got it in the mail and went straight to Bass Pro.
Right.
As soon as I got it in the mail, Bass Pro, I'm going to buy a gun.
What were you doing at 21 besides buying a gun?
I'm still in school.
What were you going to school for?
Biology.
Biology. Any certain level or just?
I have a bachelor's in biology.
Okay.
The plan was to go to pre-med. And
okay.
And it took a while to get there, and then I ended up going.
Okay. So you were in med school?
I was for a while.
Okay. What's a while?
About 2.5 years.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty good chunk of your life in med school.
Yeah.
What med school were you at?
I went to the Caribbean. I went to St. Lucia and did med school down there. Came back to the U.S., started doing rotations, and then I was like, this isn't for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's, you invested a lot of time to say that wasn't for you. What was, you know, was St. Lucia, did you have family there or friends there, or just out of the blue, I'm going to go to med school in another area of the United States, or just outside the United, but just another island?
I applied to some med schools in the U.S., and then...
Did you find that that was more political?
A lot more political.
Yes.
Getting into one of those, it's not always about you, yourself. It's about who you are, who you know, who writes your things, and if you know anybody. And Caribbean med schools are a lot cheaper.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it like a wait list or anything to go there, or just straight in?
Yep, straight in.
Now, when you go to Caribbean med school... And let's say you finished. Is there any difference in what that looks like coming to the States?
Depends. If you do your rotations here, you still have to do all the same exams, all the same licensing, all the same everything else. It's just how you match for residency.
Was somebody else in your family a doctor or something that went, or in the medical field why you wanted to do
my
that?
Father.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What does your father do?
So my father was a practicing orthopedic surgeon.
Okay.
In Peru.
Okay.
And then in 1987.
Okay.
86. They moved from Venezuela to the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah. So in 86, they moved to the U.S. And even at that time, getting licensing here is he would have had to gone back to med school.
Okay. And how old were you when that happened?
I wasn't born yet.
Okay.
So they moved to the U.S., had both of my older brothers. And then shortly after they moved here, my mother got pregnant with me, supporting three kids or two kids and a pregnant wife. Med school didn't pan out, or residency didn't pan out for my father. So he just stayed in the medical industry, medical field, and wasn't exactly a doctor, but he was a physician. So he just worked in surgery. He assists in surgery, but he's not a fully licensed physician.
And this was a something you were kind of doing just because he did it himself?
Yep.
And when you decided to stop, what was that discussion like? Was it something that was like okay, or is it were they not okay? Was that that's a big step when you invest that kind of time?
More like you do you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they've all, they've always had the support system there to make whatever you were doing to be happy, you were fine with.
Yeah.
Cool. So it what when did you get back from med school? How old were you then?
Got back from med school. I think 2015 was when I stopped.
Okay.
Yeah, 2015.
So you already had your license at that point to carry a gun. You were already carrying a gun before you went to med school.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a whole thing that happened younger.
Yeah.
With a pistol. Mm-hmm. And you decided to go to med school after the fact.
Correct.
And you just got out in 2015.
Yeah.
So you only got out 2 years before I even met you.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I thought it was a lot.
No.
A long time ago.
No, it wasn't that long, that much longer before we met.
Wow. So you went straight from med school and started working at a gun place?
Yeah.
So you started making open guns out of med school. So we went from working on learning how to work on bodies to learn how to work on guns.
Yeah. So before I went to med school, I found USPSA and I got deeply involved. I was in love.
In what country?
Here in Florida.
Okay.
So I moved back from California.
California. Wait, where did California come from? Wait, okay. We're in Florida.
Yes.
You bought a pistol permit.
Yes.
When did you leave Florida to go to California?
I moved to California when I turned 22.
Yes. After you, so you dropped out of med school?
No.
Still in med school?
No, before med school.
Okay, you didn't med school till later. Okay, I'm trying to put all this timeline together because I know spots about you, but now I'm putting a timeline together because we're actually talking about this now instead of me just... So, Florida. California.
Okay.
What?
So, you're all over the place, Brian.
I am, but we're going to put this in order so I have an understanding.
Went to college.
Okay.
Graduated.
Okay.
Moved to California.
Okay.
Moved back.
What'd you go to California for?
I was actually going to go to dental school in California.
Oh, well, that explains why you got good teeth. Still take care of your teeth. Okay.
Flossing is important.
Flossing is important. That's why I go to the dentist every 3 months, because I don't floss. I like the nitrous oxide as well, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah, you do like laughing.
I do. It's like it's a carryover thing from the nitrous every 3 months. But you were going to go to California.
Yeah.
To be a dentist?
One of the plans, yeah.
What part?
Los Angeles.
What part of Florida again? Davie?
Davie, Florida, just north of Miami.
Yeah, north of Miami, and then go to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Chasing anything or just out of the blue going to California?
Girlfriend at the time.
Okay, this makes more sense now. Yeah. So you met somebody in Florida. Mm-hmm. She's going to California.
Yes.
And you're like, I'm coming too.
Yes.
Okay.
Graduated university.
Yeah.
Let's go to California.
What'd your parents think?
That one wasn't a you do you.
Yeah, I was fixing to say.
wasn't a you do you.
I was curious how far your parents let go of you. That was a big deal.
That was not a you do you. That was a are you sure? What are you doing with your life? What do you have professionally? What are your plans? I mean, yes, you have a degree in biology, but is that a career?
Okay.
And then it was like, okay, I'm going out there. There's the area that I went to in North Los Angeles, so towards Woodland Hills.
Okay.
There's a really, really dense pharmaceutical research area.
Okay.
Something like 200 different labs in like a 10-mile radius.
Okay.
With a background in biology, lab work, all that other stuff. I knew some people out there and I was like, all right, I'm going to go do that.
Mm-hmm.
Did not do that.
Well, you did it for a little bit, right?
Never got in.
Never got into dental school.
No, didn't get into dental school. Then
where did you work in California?
Office. Just bouncer, bartender.
Oh, really? You were tall still then, so you made a bouncer.
Yeah, so I was a bouncer for a little bit, the entire time. Worked in an office, doing regular office, corporate America stuff.
Right.
And then a friend of mine owned a company that did event planning.
Right.
You know, was a bouncer, did some bartending.
I did not know that.
A lot of stuff.
See, this is why I do the podcast. I know a lot about people, but then I learn more. Mm-hmm. And this is good stuff.
I've done a lot of different things.
Well, we're going to get into that. So you're in California for how long?
2.5 years, I think, if I remember correctly.
Okay. And still with
Yes.
Okay. So that was a situation where you were still with somebody else and never thought about taking it any farther?
At the time, no.
Okay. So just there, what was she doing in California?
Going to school.
Okay. So went to school. So when you came back to Florida 2.5 years later with the person you met? Okay. Yeah. So she came back as well. Yeah. Okay. Good deal. So when did you, what was the decision about coming back to Florida? What was that all about?
The people and the politics.
At how old?
23 or so.
Okay. That leads me to another question, because at 23 years old, not a lot of people give a hell's bells about politics. What was your trigger?
So you know how I bought a gun when I was 21?
Mm-hmm.
So since I was still back and forth from Florida and California, never spent enough time to file like residency out there.
Okay.
Because I was still in Florida doing stuff, and I was back and forth. But I did not touch a gun for 2.5 years.
Because you were in California.
Mm-hmm. And because I didn't have a California driver's license, I was not allowed to go to any gun range unless I had a sponsor or somebody that was there to take me.
So you didn't find out anything about shooting
when
you were in California?
So I was like, how do you get better at shooting without shooting? And then I get on the internet and something called dry fire. And actually, the first sport that I found out was IDPA.
Okay. In California or in Florida?
On the internet.
On the internet. Okay.
And I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. This is how people get better. It's defensive. You know, I have a handgun in the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what we're doing. It's a defensive thing.
You had a handgun in the house in California.
Yes.
You just didn't go shoot at a range to practice.
Correct.
Continue.
And then that was one of the things. I was like, okay, I have a gun. I can't use it. All right. How do you get better? Internet, something called Dry Fire, International Defensive Pistol Association. Was like, okay, well, this is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Saw some YouTube videos, did some Dry Fire, did all those things, maybe like working and all that. Couldn't carry a gun in California because there's no reciprocity.
Right.
Just the politics, really, really liberal out there, which is not a bad thing. It's just different.
It is different. That's why we have state rights,
exactly,
which I fully believe in.
Yeah. So couldn't do any of that. And then the people in Los Angeles County, it's just.
Oh, I've known other people in California. I didn't know you were in that area, but I've talked to people that it's just not the same.
It's not. I'm East Coast born and bred.
Mm-hmm.
East Coast and Southern. Although anything south of Orlando is not really the South.
Mm-hmm.
So
I got it. I could see you surfing, though. Did you surf in California?
It's too damn cold.
Oh, okay, never mind. The water,
it's too cold.
Yeah, even with a wetsuit. I've done a wetsuit thing in California. It's still like, this is so cold.
Yeah, the Pacific is just too cold. I'm from sunny South Florida. Mm-hmm. The water's always 75, 80 degrees.
Right.
It's a whole different ball game.
So no water sports there as far as surfing or anything, huh?
No.
No. Wow. Did you ever go to the beach a lot and just hang out at the beach, or was that your vibe when you were there?
Went to the beach a few times. Venice Beach is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And
Huntington Beach, all those areas. Yeah. It's great.
But I was more inland. You know, it's an hour to get to the beach. And then with traffic, it's like four. Mm-hmm. So, traffic wasn't fun. Politics were crap. Taxes were insane.
Right.
People were not East Coast.
Right.
So I was just not happy. Mm-hmm.
And the girlfriend was the same way, or is she just still going to school and just wanted to transfer credits, or what did that all?
She finished school out there and then came back too.
Oh, cause she got her degree then when she was there for 2 years. Okay, good. So you come back and you're in a situation where, did you have a place to go, or did y'all, what did that look like?
Yeah. I came back, stayed with my parents for a little bit.
Okay.
And then started teaching.
In what?
Middle school.
What? How have we spent so much time together? in all the times we have in conversations, and I did, you were in charge of kids.
I was in charge of kids.
Now, this is amazing, because what did you, well, middle school, you're just teaching general studies, right?
No.
What were you teaching in middle school? You had biology as your background.
I was.
Were you a science teacher?
I was technically an interventionist.
Oh.
Exactly. So Florida has something called the FCAT, standardized testing, whatever you want to call it. And Miami-Dade County had this program where they would bring in teachers. You know, I had my certificate and everything. But it was more of a, not a remedial, but let's make our standardized testing results better. So I did that for a bit.
You were hired in to oversee the standardized testing program. Mm-hmm.
For an IB school.
What school?
An IB school.
What's that?
International Baccalaureate, sort of like a magnet program.
Like a private school
kind of thing? No, it's a
charter school kind of thing?
Public school with a separate little entity inside the school. It's designed to elevate lower income areas by importing in better students.
Okay.
So they get specific funding for that. Then when they leave there, they have an IB certificate, or they do like science. They have a focus, you know, some STEM schools or business type, and they just do that. So I came into this IB school as an interventionist. I specifically taught science and math.
Okay.
And standardized testing results got better.
Did they really?
Yeah.
How long were you doing that?
2 years.
Wow. So middle school, you got to actually see the results pretty quick. Were you just hired in as a salaried employee, contract work? What does that look like on something like that?
Salaried employee.
Okay, salaried employed with that. Did you, when you bring in something like that and you see the results and you get to see people getting better, how did that make you feel?
Oh, fantastic.
Okay.
Because you do something here, you might not see what your result is.
Right.
But you directly influence a 13, 14-year-old kid.
Right.
And you see them actually take an interest in school. You see them actually take an interest in their future. Because, I mean, it's in a lower income area.
Right.
Not as good of a neighborhood. And you're importing some better kids, some better family backgrounds and all that stuff. And then you somebody who may never have had an interest in going to university or college or anything professional like.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, shit, I can be an engineer.
Yeah, but to break through to some of those kids takes you opening them up to build relationships, to build trust. That's pretty cool. Because that's just something some of them don't want to be there anyway.
Yeah, that is true.
So you're having to build
rapport.
Rapport, yes, most definitely.
Yeah.
And overcome major objections of the wise.
Cultural as well.
Yeah.
So it takes a bit. Not everyone can do it. And that's why, and at the time, Florida had they did not treat their teachers well.
Right.
Now it's a little bit better, but it's still, I mean, teachers, they're the backbone of our youth.
Right.
So, difficult, fulfilling.
Yeah.
But difficult. So when you have kids that, hey, I actually want to do this, I mm-hmm. can do this, you just have to figure out what their interests are and how to cultivate it.
So when you do this for 2 years of your life, off on the summers?
Yeah.
Okay. State benefits. Mm-hmm. Hours aren't bad.
No.
Get a lot of holidays.
Yeah.
Why'd you stop?
Hey, it was crap.
Okay. So just totally economical reasons to get out.
Yeah. Mom was a teacher.
Oh, yeah. We did. Okay. So we did the thing with dad.
No.
medical school.
We tried the thing with dad.
We tried the thing with dad.
Well, sort of. Because
right.
Tried dental.
Right.
Didn't get into medical schools as right. I graduated. Then I was like, oh, California's got a cool dental program.
Right.
In a university that I knew a professor at. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, yeah, come out. You know, we'll sit down. We'll try to do this thing. And that didn't pan out.
Right.
And then it was like, oh, let me just work in a lab. And then it was like, okay, well, we're coming back to Florida. What am I going to do in Florida? I was like, all right, mom's a teacher. Easy enough. I have a degree.
Did she help open the door for you to get you in since she was already a teacher?
Yeah.
Oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
I didn't put the correlation there together. Yeah. That makes sense.
So she put me in contact with an old friend of hers. They're like, oh, yeah, come down. We have this spot that we can fill. And I was like, all right, did that. And then... it's a lot of political stuff in with the school board.
And very much so. Very
so
much
so. Between that and the pay, you mm-hmm. know, financially, I was like, okay, well, my dad was like, hey, you said you were going to medical school. Why'd you never go? Mm-hmm. Couldn't get in. All right. How about the Caribbean? I was like, okay, why not? Did some research, did all that stuff, and... packed my bags, went to the Caribbean.
By yourself?
Yep.
So the girl didn't work out at that time?
No.
Wow. Was that one reason you wanted to go to the Caribbean, just kind of start over again? Because it's a different area altogether?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. It was just, I moved to California, moved back to Florida, moved to St. Lucia.
Mm-hmm.
It's, do what you got to do, right?
What was that like in St. Lucia going to medical school? Being an American, what was that like?
Very interesting.
Okay.
Very interesting.
Never a dull moment, it sounds like.
No, never a dull moment. culturally, it's way different. But it was fun. It was the Caribbean. I learned the true definition of island time.
Which is?
Just set your clock backwards a few hours and you're good to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you ever meet anybody comfortable there to hang out with and for a consistent amount of time, or just no girlfriends or anything?
It was a lot of studying.
Okay. So you were dedicated at that point.
It was a lot of studying. Med school was it's a lot of studying.
You were very disciplined at that point then, because that's a big deal to have to, you know, being in another area. Being around island time,
yeah.
Being around everything that's associated with island time, and you still were disciplined enough to stay focused.
Finished everything that I needed to finish.
Okay.
And then Caribbean was done, came to the U.S., started doing some rotations, and then, like, the truth of Caribbean medical schools hit.
Which is?
Unless you are... from a very good school down there, there's a certain handful, or you are top tier of the top tier for like testing and results,
mm-hmm.
You're not going to get any of the fun specialties. You're going to go into general medicine or family practice or internal medicine or peds or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really where I wanted, because growing up, medicine to me was what my dad did, surgery.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. We went to the pediatrics every year for a checkup, but that was it. We never really got sick. We never did anything.
Right.
And then being face to face in working in hospitals, and it was just the health in the U.S. is not really good.
Okay.
And there was just, it wasn't for me.
Takes a special person to dedicate their life to being a servant of other people's ailments.
Yes.
And there's no way in hell I could do it. I mean, just point blank. That's hard to deal with. And I know, you know, I don't have that
personality.
Yeah. No, you know, oh, you'll feel better. Get over it. Kind of, really? Because I'm a self-motivating individual that makes myself get over it all the time. You know?
I mean,
this is part of it.
Like, but your blood pressure's high.
Yeah.
Well, stop eating so much sodium and like lose some weight.
Right.
No, diabetes.
Yeah. You have options.
Yeah. You know, and some people don't like that.
Right.
And it's like you're just going to, this is a very, not easy, but a very simple way of resolving a lot of your ailments.
But you went through school in middle school, making kids see a different light, change a path, go in a good direction. Same way could be done in the medical field to help things and help people and move in a different direction. It just wasn't the same.
It wasn't, because it's a lot easier getting a 14-year-old kid that's in a gang to see some other options than somebody who likes eating McDonald's twice a day to stop eating that.
Right.
Unfortunately.
So yeah, that's a whole different ball game to get into as far as that. So you came back. You did residency.
Rotations.
And you just said,
not for me.
Not for you.
And at the time, I still hadn't had to take any loans because the schooling is a lot cheaper in the Caribbean. And I was like, this isn't for me. Let me just.
Did you work when you're in your Caribbean as well?
No.
Okay.
So between working in California and teaching.
Putting money back and everything else, just make it happen.
Yeah.
Sweet. What was next? What did you decide to do after that?
Fell in love with shooting.
And that's when everything started happening in shooting.
Yep.
So what came first, working on guns or shooting?
Shooting.
Okay. IDPA, what you saw on the internet?
I actually did not shoot an IDPA match for years.
Okay.
So when I moved back from California to Florida, it just so happened that there was a local USPSA club or local NRA club that ran USPSA matches. And local, like 10 minutes from the house.
Okay.
So I was like, let me see what this is about.
All right. Let me push pause real quick.
Okay.
Let's listen to one of our sponsors and let's get into what it was like going from just owning a gun to like, there's a whole nother thing happening here. Does that sound good?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's take a quick break. This week's podcast is brought to you by Kona Gold. Kona Gold is a premier lifestyle brand for those who work hard and play harder. There are many hemp companies out there that get lost in the crowd, but Kona Gold sets the gold standard with its premier line of products. When traveling all around with a Magical Mystery Tour to different matches, I travel around with lots of different flavors, including pink grapefruit, candy apple, and vanilla cherry. Make sure to stop by and get some for yourself. They are all zero calories, zero sugar, use organic hemp, and are THC and CBD free. Competitive shooters love them because there's no shakes, no headaches, and no crash. When you order from ConaGoldHemp.com, make sure to use discount code HUNTERSHD for another 20% off. So, educate me on the button that started seeing the shooting that you were talking about. Because you went from just owning a handgun, legally, and finding the USPSA, just... That's a lot going on there. So,
So like I said, I was in California. Didn't know anything about USPSA.
Right.
Didn't know that there was competitions around.
Right.
Saw something called IDPA on the internet. I was like, okay, that's cool. And then something called IPSC. That's cool too. Moved back to Florida. I was like, okay, now I can actually go shoot. So I would just go to the indoor range, you know. Make noise, put holes in paper. Didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
And then I was like, okay, there's this USPSA club or NRA club that had USPSA matches, local, about 10 minutes. And they did things all the time. I was like, well, let me just go see what's going on. So went out there, shot my first match, and I fell in love.
Who did you just go by yourself or somebody invited you?
By myself. Did not know anyone.
Wow. Continue.
Show up and they're like, what do you need? You need a holster and you need a belt and you need some things that hold your magazines on your belt.
I was right.
Like, okay, cool. So I had these like nylon with the Velcro straps and everything and an Uncle Mike's holster.
That yeah.
Like, and a leather belt.
Some pristine stuff.
Oh, my. Well, back in the day,
that was it.
There was zip ties all over.
So this is where the zip ties started from.
Yeah, anybody that has known me for a number of years, zip ties everywhere.
That's right.
And most of the time, I don't even snip them off. I just leave them flapping.
Well, there's more stuff now because it makes sense. When you were a doctor, you used to sewing things up. I didn't look at it that way till now, but this makes more sense.
What's the old adage? Duct tape and WD-40?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was me, but with zip ties.
Okay.
Yeah, so I shot a match with a Beretta and some nylon things with zip ties.
Same Beretta you bought.
That my only gun at the time.
Okay, continue.
Really pretty, super smooth grips, primo competition stuff. But I fell in love. I was like, this is cool. And then got addicted. And within like 2 months, I bought a Glock.
Okay.
Started shooting the Glock. And then within like 2 years, I had more than one.
Okay.
Bought a limited gun. Traveled around. So my first match was in January.
Of what year?
2013.
Okay.
My first major was February.
Okay.
Of 2013.
Wow. Yeah. What was your first major you went to?
Florida Open in Frostproof.
Okay. The big match.
And back in the day, it was very difficult. It was known as one of the hardest matches in the country.
And you were shooting limited?
Production.
Production. Mm-hmm. What class were you when you came in? You remember?
We had just done a classifier match, which was my local club's yearly picnic match. They put on four classifiers and they have a picnic afterwards. It's a great hoedown.
Right.
So I classified super awesome D class production.
Nice.
I know.
Yes. A month into it. We're going great.
A month into it. Going fantastic. And it just happened. And the update rolled over and I was like, I am classified. I'm great. And I had just got the Glock at the time. So yeah, it was like 4 weeks or 5 weeks before I bought a Glock, like a more proper competition gun for production.
Right.
And then I had five mags total because that's what came with the gun. I bought a used production rig from somebody. A Glock 34.
Is that person still laughing that they sold it to you back in the day?
Well, I mean, that same gun I sold to someone. So
there you go. Okay.
So I bought a Glock 34, came with a holster, five mags, and some mag pouches for like $550.
Okay.
Turnkey production. Let's go.
Yeah. Zip ties included.
I did not need zip ties at the time because they gave me a full rig.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zip ties came back. Bought
a rig. They bought a rig. The gun came for free.
Pretty much. Yeah. $550.
Yeah.
Gun set up, turnkey. Let's go. You know, trigger job, fiber optic sights, everything.
Where were you working at then?
I was teaching at the time.
Okay. You were teaching, went back to go teaching again.
Well, no, that was when I came back from California.
Got it.
So I was teaching there, was doing that. And then got addicted. It was like, this is really cool. Shot my first major. I was like, this is really cool. And the funny thing is I didn't even know that there was these major competitions.
Okay.
Somebody at the local was like, hey, are you going up this weekend? I was like, going up where?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, Frostproof. They're having a big match. I was like, I did not know about this. How do I get in? They're like, oh, just do this thing. And there was no practice score at the time.
Okay.
So they're like, yeah, you just call this number. I think match signup was around then.
Right.
So registered a match signup. I got in on Friday. So I shot my local match on a Thursday night. Got in the car, drove up. after that Thursday night, show up at Frostproof Friday morning, and I guess I forgot to grab all my mags, so I show up to shoot production at Florida Open with four mags. I had no idea who anyone was. They're like, oh, you're on this squad. And I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to find my stuff, and everybody knows that I'm a new guy.
Right.
I'm just tall.
Yeah.
New guy. I'm not hard to miss.
Well, let's take me to a picture. Draw me a picture here. What were you wearing to your first match?
Because I don't even know.
Okay. Because you were just regular, just shorts just, and regular clothes. And
yeah.
You weren't doing the funky socks yet or anything like that. You weren't a man of your own yet.
No. I was the guy that was trying not to point a gun at anyone.
Okay.
You know, and not put any holes that in anyone that
didn't belong.
Yes.
Okay.
I was so out of it.
You were out of your element.
And I show up and there's all these people with like really cool jerseys with all these logos and, oh, what kind of gun is that? And, yeah. Oh, what is this? It was like, I was so out of my element.
Okay.
And I'm sitting there and I'm trying to find my stuff. And there's a little Asian guy next to me. And he sees me like flustered. And I'm like, I can't find my mags. And he was like, what are you shooting? And I was like, I'm shooting a Glock. He's like, I shoot a Glock too.
Right.
I was like, oh, well, this is cool. He's like, I have some mags that I can let you borrow if you want. I was like, oh, this is great. So he went to his bag and handed me a magazine. He was like, here, you can use this. He's like, it's a practice mag, but you can use it. And I was like, I don't know what a practice mag is, but
okay.
All right, let's go. And then I saw him shoot and I was amazed.
You realize that there's a difference in the D class and whatever he was doing at that time was a lot faster.
Little Filipino guy.
Okay.
First name has two letters, a K and a C.
Okay. Oh.
So I've never shot.
You were squatted with him or just.
I was squatted with the entirety of Team Glock.
Okay.
I think it was the Red Dot shooting team and just the Brazos team.
Yeah.
I remember that they had the yellow jerseys. I was on the super squad for Florida Open in 2013, never having shot a major, barely knowing how to get the gun out of the holster. And and every now and then I'll see Casey because, you know, we're friendly now.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
was he not friendly then?
Well, no, I just said, I didn't know anyone. I mean, he was super friendly. He's like, he giving me a magazine.
Yeah, of course. That's awesome.
So, and that was my first experience with what you would call like top tier GMs.
Right.
National level GMs.
But you didn't know to be nervous.
I did not know anything. I did not know anyone. Everyone.
Did anybody
tell me who they were?
Nope. Did anybody try to help you or anything? Or they just stayed on their own grounds?
They knew that I was new.
Yeah.
They kind of just like didn't really reach out.
Okay. You know,
but you're at a major.
No, no,
you're
no.
Doing your own thing.
I'm not saying they should have had. I'm just curious if they did. That's what
I thought. But I mean, he said, hey, you know, are you okay? What's going on? And I was like, I can't find my mags.
Yeah, of course.
And did that. So
that's wonderful.
So that was my first experience with like that caliber of shooter.
Right.
And that affected me, still does a decade later.
Right.
And I've told him the story again, and he's like, oh yeah, I remember. And we every now and then we laugh about it. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Now it's a whole different story because now I'm that guy.
Yeah.
With a fancy jersey and all the logos and all that stuff. And everyone says that I shoot pretty okay. So it's like,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a wild ride.
So mom's a teacher, dad's a doctor. What'd they think about you doing shooting sports?
So this is a funny anecdote. I told my mother that I wanted us to competitively shoot. And as a joke, my mother, we have a very weird sense of humor.
Okay.
And she said, you can compete if you want to, but if you don't win, I'll kill you.
Okay.
In Portuguese, though. It's more of a like a saying down there. But yeah, that was what it was. If you don't win, I'll kill you. And I was like, okay. Yeah. So... It took a number of years, but you know, started winning some stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool. Did now Luigi Lee.
Yeah.
Italian Asian.
Yeah.
Explain this, the name.
All right. First name, Luigi.
Yes.
Italian. my mother's side, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 generations ago,
okay,
left Italy and went to Brazil.
Okay.
Coffee, coffee, cattle, farmland.
Okay.
In like little town in the middle of São Paulo.
Mm-hmm.
Like just really pretty interior country.
Right.
That's mom's side.
Okay.
Dad's side, my grandfather left China, went to Peru.
Okay.
Got married in Peru to a Chinese woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then had kids.
Very cool.
Then they moved to Venezuela for a little bit, and then they moved to the U.S., and that's where I came around.
They moved out of Venezuela with everything going on, with all the crap?
It was when it was starting.
Okay.
When so it was starting. In the late 80s.
Okay. So they got out when they saw the writing on the wall kind of thing.
Kind of.
Very good insights to see that.
Yeah.
All right. So you go shoot your first major.
Mm-hmm.
You realize you're not Casey Eusebio.
I am not Casey Eusebio.
And you're driven more to go make this happen.
I was in love.
Okay.
I was in love.
What was next?
First major in February.
Yes.
So first match in January.
Yeah.
First major in February. First time I rode in a major was April.
You took the RO class then?
No.
Okay. Somebody wanted to help.
I worked
on the tablet and do the stuff.
I worked Area 6 in 2013 when I was in St. Augustine.
Okay.
And still really new, didn't know anything. But somebody told me, hey, the fastest and best way of getting better and learning things is go work a match.
Go learn the rules.
So I was like, I went and worked a match.
Mm-hmm.
Did my RO class at the end of the year. So I think I was certified 2014.
Right.
Yeah, so within a year, I was an RO, and then I traveled a lot, shot a lot, worked a lot, and did all that stuff. And naturally, I just got better as I shot stuff.
When did you meet Shay? How many years into that?
Shay was just that guy, you know, that was doing things. Every now and then, he'd come to the club. Right. I didn't really know him.
Okay.
You know, I knew people locally that would shoot his guns. I just didn't know the guy.
Right.
And then I did all my own stuff, you know, have Dremel, we'll work on stuff.
Yeah.
Made a lot of things that should have required tax stamps, you know, as a mistake. And I learned.
Right.
Fixed a lot of stuff and then had a limited gun. And then one day my, extractor breaks. And when I was shooting limited, I don't remember what year it was.
That's fine.
But it was like 2 days before leaving for nationals.
Oh.
My extractor breaks, and I was like, I have no idea how to work on 2011s. So I had friends in the club, and they're like, oh, yeah, Shay can put a new one in. I was okay. Like, okay, let me go to Shay.
You went to his place?
Yeah, I just went to a shop right there in Sunrise.
I know where it's at.
And he was like, okay, no, you need an extractor, you're leaving in 2 days. Yeah, you can come by. We fit an AFTEC into it, and I went off my merry way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time that I actually had a business deal with Shay.
Right.
Professionally.
Yeah.
And years later, I was in the shop one day, you know, just shooting shit. And he decided, and I guess he was like, oh, they made a joke about that him needing some help. And I was like, I'll help. And that's how that started.
What were you doing before you were helping Shay? What did you do before then?
I just got back from the Caribbean.
So you were done teaching.
Yeah.
And you just went, you know, went there and found a job with Shay.
Yeah.
Sweet. So you went from not knowing how to do an extractor to building 2011 limited or open guns, both. What did that look like when you start getting into the whole custom gun business?
I didn't know anything about 2011s.
Okay.
1911s, 2011s, what have you. Didn't know anything. I went in and it was like, this is how you fit a ear. This is how you fit a trigger. This is how you polish this. You know, very, very started from the basics.
Who was all your mentors there?
Shay and Speedy.
Okay. Did you like it immediately?
I like working with my hands. Okay. I like seeing immediate results.
Okay.
And that perfectly fit the bill. It was great.
Very cool. So still wearing just a basic shirt, or did had any sponsors reached out to you at that point? Or were you still just, you know, plugging along, you know, doing ROs and traveling around? And where was your classification up to? Okay.
I probably not high.
All right.
Locally, we never really had classifiers.
Right.
They'll have one a month.
Right.
And usually that one a month, I was always traveling to a major.
Right.
So it took me a number of years to like actually get better. So I think I went from C class to master, like match bumping at nationals.
You get getting, that's right. Cause you were always getting called a sandbagger. I remember that mm-hmm. now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think somebody made you a holster. There's a bunch of sandbags.
Yeah. I still have that holster, and I use it, every now and then when I use that gun,
right.
It's a pallet of sandbags on a holster.
Yeah. It's pretty good stuff.
Yeah. Some people said I was the greatest B class shooter to ever live. And then somebody came out and beat me about that, but you know.
Yeah, I think you finished pretty strong at the world shoot.
Yeah, I did okay.
So, you know, you're going through all these processes. Mm-hmm. You're getting involved in USPSA early on. Mm-hmm. And when you first come in, you don't know anything about USPSA. You don't know the players, you don't know all the stuff behind the scenes. You just know what you know to go shoot and have fun.
Sort of.
Tell me more.
I RO'd a lot.
Okay. So that's where the interesting story started to happen.
Yes. So I RO'd a lot. I gave back a lot early on. Mm-hmm. You know, it benefits everyone. You know, mm-hmm. you might get your match fee comped. You might get some stipend. You might get some help with travel.
Right.
But you learn a lot. You meet people. And I really enjoyed watching different people shoot.
Okay.
And I figured the best way of learning something is watching somebody who's good at doing it. You know, you can learn just watching anybody here on the range.
Right.
You learn what to do right mm-hmm. and what to do wrong.
Right.
So don't do the bad things. Do the good things. So I did that a lot.
When was the first time you DQ'd? What was that like? What'd you do? You remember?
At a major or at a local?
Just in general. When you realize, hey, I'm not supposed to do this again. Talking about learning and watching. That's why I asked that question.
It was a local match and I broke the 180.
Okay.
Well, it wasn't really the 180. It was more of a 90 degree because we're very limited at the local range.
Right.
So I went to a port and I had the 180, which is a 90 right here in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of turned a little off to the right and I shot a target that I could see. Mm-hmm. And then one of the guys is like, hey, he's not allowed to shoot that from there. And everyone else was like, it's fine. And I was like, no. I realized this. And I was like, no. They're like, oh no, you can keep shooting the next stages. And I was like, no, I shot the target from the wrong spot. It's my fault. Broke the 180. Broke the air quote 180. Mm-hmm. And just I gotta go. Went to safe table, gun my bag, grabbed the timer, and just ran the timer for the rest of the night.
But you realize what you did wrong?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Well, I mean, I broke a rule.
Right.
And just, hey, nope, take it off. I'm done. Mm-hmm. They're like, no, you can do the next one. And I was like, no, I'm done. Give me the timer. Let's go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's take another break.
Okay.
And I want to get into more stuff around the 2018 mark to present. Because okay. There's a lot that happened between those years.
Yeah.
And let's do a little bit more detail and digging after that. All right.
All right.
Here, this is another break from our sponsors. This week's podcast is also sponsored by Make Ready Nutrition. They have three products available for shooters that are 2-Alpha Performance to drink before hammer down, 2-Alpha Recovery that I use personally as a meal replacement for lunch with 34 grams of protein and is low carb, 2-Alpha Ammunition, which is next level hydration plus energy and amino acids for shooters, gym workouts, or pushing your body in sports and recreation. Whether you're in the Texas heat or in Arizona desert, 2-Alpha Ammunition works harder and endures longer. This unique formula is manufactured for shooters by shooters to replenish your body with electrolytes and hydration while helping aid in muscle recovery and providing fast energy. For 25% off your next order, go to makereadynutrition.com/discount/huntershd or enter huntershd at checkout for 25% off your entire order. makereadynutrition.com. Are you ready?
So you're getting involved in shooting
you got a lot of things going on. You're in a situation where sponsors have started to realize who you are. And what was the first sponsor that picked you up that was like, okay, I want to sponsor you? What was that company?
UM Tactical.
UM Tactical. Okay. I know Brian and Janet very well.
Yeah.
So you're running some of their gear. Mm-hmm. What was after that?
Oh, what? I really don't like asking people.
Right.
I mean, if I'm going to use something, it's going to be because I want to use it.
Right.
Because I believe in it.
Right.
And if I don't like it, then I'm just like, hey, no, this doesn't work.
Right.
And Brian just did a lot of support locally for the three gun scene and all that other stuff.
Right.
And he had a cool shop. It was on the East Coast at the time.
Right.
He was making holsters and I was like, oh, these are cool. And, you know, he was trying to figure it out and I'm really hands-on. Like I like technical things. I like engineering things. So, he was like, hey, you know, you want to come help out and help design stuff? And I was like, all right, yeah, whenever I have time, I'll run up there. So yeah, it was like, hey, do you have this gun? Yes, I have this gun. Oh, can we make a mold off of it?
Right.
So I would ride up there and, you know, make a mold off a holster and mm-hmm. all these other things. And it was cool. So their first 1911 holster was molded off of my Springfield that I had in the safe.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It was, it took pictures with it in the holster and everything. So
right.
I think it's still on their website. Or yeah, maybe.
Very cool. So you started getting better. Mm-hmm. You started shooting for companies. You started making money on different companies' programs they had, where if you finished in a certain spot, you could make money. That was a
lot of contingency programs.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of stuff out there for ways to make money above and beyond.
I mean, you're not going to be making money.
Right.
But it helps offset the cost of, you know, everything that we put into this.
Right.
Because, I mean, you travel here to Odessa, Texas.
Yep.
It's not easy to get here.
No.
So, I mean, it helps offset the cost of travel. I mean, at the time I was doing like 20 majors a year. I was all in.
What were your goals being all in like that? What kind of goals did you set to say, hey, I'm going to go shoot 20 majors. This is where I want to be. What was the goal?
There was no goal at the time. I just wanted to be there. It's just what I wanted to do.
You wanted to be a part of the sport?
Yeah, I wanted to be part of the sport. I mean, I'm like I told you, I was in love.
Right.
When I have new people come in and I teach new shooters,
yeah,
locally, whatever it is, they shoot a first match and they're like, "Yeah, I like it." I'm like, "Welcome to the addiction."
Right.
Because that's, I mean, it's not at the time it went from a hobby to a lifestyle.
Okay. When was that click from a hobby to a lifestyle?
2013.
Okay. Pretty quick.
Yeah. Like I said, I went. All in.
All or nothing.
Shot a match in January. Shot a major in February.
Right.
Worked a major in April.
Okay.
And then volunteered at the local club. Mm-hmm. And within 2 years at the local club, I was already on the board.
At your local club on the board. Wow.
You know, working all these majors. I just most people, they come, they shoot a match and then leave.
Right.
You know, when you staff a match, ROing a match, a lot of the times there's a lot more camaraderie.
Yeah.
They'll hang out at the hotel, hang out at the hotel pool, like after the match, decompressing. Yes. Talking about what happened, what transpired and things like that. It's that camaraderie, that sense of togetherness that you get there.
It's another family.
It is.
A whole nother family. That's what I found out.
Yeah.
When you got into it deep enough, and then you started realizing there was a little bit of drama here. What was that like the first time you realized that?
So,
because if this is your sport, this is your everything, this is what you fell in love with, then all of a sudden you start hearing things that aren't as positive.
Yeah.
You can become pretty defensive the first time that happens, right?
Yes. So I think probably the first time I started hearing some of the unpleasantries mm-hmm. was working some majors in like 2014 or so.
Right.
But I'm in Florida. You know, headquarters is in Washington State.
Right.
It's pretty far away.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't that involved on the national level.
Okay.
I didn't work a nationals event for a number of years.
Right.
I shot I liked shooting. Nationals, I just went and shot.
Right.
Area matches, level twos, I would go work and shoot.
So when you heard the garbage at the beginning, you just didn't care.
It didn't bother me. I didn't know.
It didn't affect you.
I didn't know who these people were.
Right.
I had names.
Right.
And I'm really bad with names.
Right.
So it didn't really mean anything to me.
Okay.
Now that I am more involved,
right,
I know these names and I know these faces, and I've traveled nationally and internationally. It's like, okay, well, now I know what had happened and I know the stories were.
But so now you can go back in the history and put the pieces together.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
So, but yeah, the reason why I traveled so much and did so many majors was because that second family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at you and I.
Yeah.
I mean, some people don't know because in the recent past, in the recent 2 years, we haven't really traveled much together.
But that's right.
For a while, we were together, what, 27 weeks out of the year?
Yes. And let's start how that started off at Mississippi Classic.
In what, 2015?
No. 2016? Hell no. It was 18.
2018?
Yeah, it was 18. And first time, it was the first time I ever been to a USPSA match was in 18.
Yeah.
Mississippi Classic was the first one. Where was your shooting at in 2018?
In 2018, I was just having fun.
Okay.
I was just having fun. And I believe, I think I shot open at that match.
Okay.
Because I was already with Shay.
Yep.
And I was just wearing, I think I had a neon pink jersey.
Yeah.
Just funny.
When did the funny, well, before we go into me and you, when did the funny start and why? Where did the socks come from? Where did everything come from? What was your decision to change?
The socks came much later.
Okay. Well, when did the pink start happening?
October. I don't remember what year.
Why?
Breast cancer.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. Who had breast cancer?
A good friend of mine's wife.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I had no idea.
So it was like, all right.
Started like in October during Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Something about that.
And you never let it go.
And I was like, I'm gonna do this. It was more of a, hey, nobody needs to know.
Yeah.
But I was like, all right, I'm just gonna do this.
Well, okay.
Hot pink jersey.
And it was a hit.
Kind of.
Well, yeah, it was. It's just.
It was like, well, I mean, I'm not that hard to miss on the range,
right?
Even if I'm wearing nondescript clothing,
right?
You know, 6'3" Asian dude, long hair.
Yeah.
And then throw in a hot pink jersey in it. Like, oh, okay, all right.
You like the attention?
I'm not going to say no.
Well, there's a reason why I matched my shoes and my jersey as well. I mean, I like the attention as well.
Yeah.
It became fun, then it became just part of your, yeah. It becomes who you are.
Sort of, yeah. Okay. I mean, even now, like, getting a team jersey, it's like, you can't do the colors, but you can still do the socks.
Right. And that's when the socks came in.
That's when the socks came in.
Okay. And
I really don't like wearing pants.
Right. Well, shorts.
No, I just don't like wearing pants.
I know. I understand, but you wear shorts.
I wear shorts.
You don't have them on now for the video. If anybody's wanting to watch the video, he doesn't have any pants on.
But, I don't have pants on, but I do have shorts.
YouTube videos are going to go up.
but living in Florida and shooting in Florida, it's just really hot.
Is that?
And I don't like wearing pants and humidity and all that stuff. And, you know, so I was like, how do I wear shorts, but still have the benefit of wearing pants? And I was like, oh, knee-high socks.
Right.
Keep the sun off you.
Right.
So used to wear sleeves.
Yes.
And all that stuff. And, you know, funny color, Under Armour, like tech shirts.
Yes.
You know, whatever it was. And it was just, hey, well, anybody know where Luigi is? Oh, yeah, he's way down there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, one of the reasons why, like, the sleeves. So the Under Armour sleeves were before the pink jersey.
Okay.
And that was because I was wearing, I think, like a gray or a brown shirt one day at the range.
Right.
And I heard a make ready. And I was downrange at a major match.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I was wearing a staff shirt.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I was like, you know what? I want people to see me wherever I am.
Okay.
So, funny colors, undershirt.
Right.
Jersey was like, okay, let's make a hot pink one, you know.
Right.
Let's wear safety yellow socks.
Yeah.
It was whatever it was.
I'm going to be seeing because I'm not going to have a make ready on me top of me again. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yes. So let's go back to, I don't know, May of 2018.
Mississippi Classic.
Mississippi Classic. Bryce and Blaine Dupuy.
Mm-hmm. They're there. I remember.
And they brought you up to me, said, you got to meet this guy. Mm-hmm. And I saw a character coming my way. I left it that because you had all the beautiful colors on. I'm immediately intrigued.
Same was on the other side.
Yes.
Two characters meet at a match in Mississippi.
Yes.
And there might have been some crawfish involved.
Well, no, because I don't eat crawfish. It's too spicy, and I don't like sitting around a trough with everybody else eating. But that's just my own personal thing. But besides that, you picked up a pair of Hunter's HD Gold.
Ooh, man, this story.
Yeah, this story.
Yeah. Okay.
And you were nice, but you gave me, it is the middle of the match. Mm-hmm. I do demo days, of course. Mm-hmm. And you gave me umpteen reasons why you didn't like them.
13 or 14.
It was a lot. It was more than 10. Why you didn't like them based on what you had on and based on what you were doing. Mm-hmm. And I was fine. I had no problem with that. I appreciate your feedback and have a problem. I think the Dupuy brothers are more horrified than anybody because they're very well-spoken kids with great parents that raised them. And it was, they were not expecting the unexpected.
Well, I mean, if I have a product,
right.
If I make something,
right,
I want constructive criticism.
Yes, 100%.
I instruct, mm-hmm. I teach, I train,
yes,
whatever it is. How can we get better?
Yep.
It's not how can I get better. It's how right. can we get better?
Right.
And some people can take constructive criticism, and some people can't take criticism at all.
That's right.
So when you reacted the way that you did, I was like, this is a character. But this is a good character.
Right.
I want him to be a main character in the story.
Okay. Well, about a month later, you called me mm-hmm. and you said something to the level of, hey, I'm in a different mindset. I'm not in a match. Can you send me a pair down to the shop since they're safety rated? And let me identify what these are all about again.
Yes.
And that's when everything changed as far as you had more time to study the lens, the technologies, and everything else. What was that like when you know, at that point, when you go from not for me to, okay, there's definitely something different here. You had a lot of stuff going on because we didn't talk. You know, I just got an email out of the blue or a phone call out of the blue.
Yeah.
It was.
So it's not that I didn't like them. Is you asked me what I thought.
Right.
And these are things that you can fix because the good things. Yeah, you want to enhance the good things, mm-hmm. but you also want to go after your lowest hanging fruit,
right?
And you can do that in any business venture,
right?
In any methodology,
correct.
So that's what the criticism was for, and it's not that I didn't say that they didn't have their pluses because
right.
I mean the clarity was ungodly, mm-hmm. and the contrast that I got was great. Mm-hmm. You said they were safety rated, so
yep.
we talked a month later.
Yep,
I think it was 4 or 5 weeks, something like that.
Yep.
Called you. You sent down a pair. And pretty much never took them off.
Exactly. I think you were one of the first people that wore the aviators with the side shields on all the time. It was a great time for it was a great time on social media.
Yep. It was this was before the whole Jeffrey Dahmer type thing came out.
Yes, exactly.
This was more of a fear and loathing and Johnny Depp type of thing.
Exactly.
At the time, I guess nobody ever wore your aviators and nobody really liked them. They were like, these are not for me. And I was like, no, these are for me.
Yep.
And then now it's socially accepted to wear them.
Every aviators have come back. It's just a nut job of what's happening. I've tried to discontinue frames and people still buy the ones I have from the very beginning. But, then I think we met again at 9 days of Nationals.
9 days of Nationals, yeah.
And that was when you were shooting
all nine days
for aggregate scoring. Mm-hmm. And
I think I placed like 19th.
You were up there.
Yeah.
You were up there. You were on stage.
Yeah.
You were up on stage. I remember that. I think they brought the top 20 up there.
Top 20.
Yep. And, a lot of this is a blur. Maybe you can help me remember how a lot of happened, but
to put two half brains together, we might make one.
Might want make one, but yes, but you know, we pretty much hit it off.
Oh,
after that point.
Yeah, inseparable.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you were opening a lot of doors for me as far as introducing me to a lot of different people in the shooting sports, because you had all these contacts that you had in Florida, and Florida's where a lot of the guy where I got started in USPSA. Then I came down there and met Shay and hung out at the shop. Mm-hmm. And it's just been a whirlwind. I think the next 2 years we're on the road together. So,
well, I think it was 27 weekends in one year.
we did a lot. It was awesome. It became just a whole other thing. Yeah. And you know, that's how you know we've become so close friends, because we just clicked. I still don't know why sometimes, but I know that it's definitely.
I wouldn't change it for
the world. It's been a blast. And then you know, politics change in USPSA. Mm-hmm. Things go from okay to like, what the hell's going on? And you know, we lose a president, and then another president comes in, and then you decide, here we are today, and now you've decided you want to run for president yourself, because you've managed. We didn't talk about it, but you've been president of your own, of the gun range down in at Homestead. You've ran that. You've been on the board. You've done a lot of stuff. Now social media is more aggressive,
a lot
than
more
ever,
aggressive.
Based on how certain people feel about what's going on, which is their right to feel that way and their right to speak that way. I don't have a problem with freedom of speech at all on anything, on any level. It's part of our freedom. You're getting ready to get in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Confrontation is not something you usually have to deal with, because you listen a lot and you come out with a solution. I've watched it before, because I've, you know, you have taken the rules, you know, on many situations. I've seen you on, I think, 9 ARB committees when there's an arbitration.
Yeah.
People come to you because you know the rules. I'm not even going to go there about that. We had a discussion last night over dinner about one of the rules over a stage here at Dragon's Cup that was not a lot of people weren't aware of, and it was taken care of. But my point being is where, what makes you ready for this? Why are you wanting to do what you're wanting to do to run for president?
So running for president wasn't always the plan.
Okay. What was the plan?
Area 6 director.
Okay. So start off, kind of go through the ranks.
Yes.
Okay.
I was going to do section coordinator because it was offered to me a few years ago.
The one that?
In South Florida.
Okay. Okay.
So section coordinator was offered to me.
Okay.
We just never were able to get together on it because at the time I had just taken a position with Safariland. And that's not in the section.
Yep.
And at the time, it was a remote thing, and I didn't know if I was going to have to move to Jacksonville full time.
Right.
So I said, I would love to, but I can't.
Okay.
So the plan was always going to be, we'll do area director.
Okay.
Because that's a way of affecting things. Because I've been through a few rule changes.
Yes, you have.
Provisional divisions.
Yes.
Changes in provisional divisions.
Yep.
Because a lot of people that are newer to this is when carry optics came out, it was 10 round mags.
Right.
You shot 10 rounds of minor. And I think it was 2 months. It was 2 months before nationals. They went from 10 rounds to 140 millimeter mags.
Oh, so they're used to changing stuff right before nationals. This is nothing new when they did the flashlights. Okay.
It really isn't. And it was a provisional division at the time that they were allowed to change however often they wanted to. Now it's
now they got the same. Now they have that changed. Yes,
now it's 12 months of locked provisional.
Mm-hmm. You happy with that change?
No, because the point of a provisional division is working out the kinks before you make it a full fledged division.
Continue.
But that's my personal.
No, I get it. That's why I asked.
It's a better way of getting data,
right?
But how many people change divisions within a year?
Mm-hmm.
So that's besides the point. Mm-hmm. But I have gone through a few.
Okay.
And the guys that are in charge of the majority of those decisions are mm-hmm. on the board. I was like, how can I make my voice be heard? And all of my area directors that I've had, I had their cell phone numbers.
Right.
They knew who I was.
Right.
We had rapport. We communicated. Not always heard.
Yes.
And that's in every aspect.
Okay.
Like shooting, professional, you might have the greatest idea, but if it's not implemented, you know, it doesn't matter.
Right.
So I was like, how do I do this? And I never did it earlier because 2018 was a qualification year.
Yep.
For the 2020 World Shoot.
That's correct.
So in 2018 and 2019, I qualified for the U.S. Production Optics national team.
Yes, you did.
For the 2020 World Shoot.
Yep. Congratulations.
COVID, then COVID happened.
Yep.
And COVID happened again.
Yep.
So it got postponed. So I took it a little more seriously in 2018.
Okay.
Sort of stepped back from working as many matches and more of a be on the competitor side.
Right.
A little more seriously. And then I was like, that was the goal. And I achieved the goal. And I had that done. So now it's like, am I going to try for another world shoot? Or is it time to actually give back to the sport that I love?
Okay.
And I can go work matches and do all that stuff. But once that's done, there's nothing lasting on that. I mean, not everyone's going to remember 10 years from now, oh, whatever happened.
Right.
It's, oh, it was just a match and there was somebody doing it. And yeah, it was fun. Affecting change in that manner is a little more important.
So you're in a situation now where you want to affect change for the future of the sport.
What's the saying? The epitome or the pinnacle of a civilization is when a man plants a tree that he knows he will not sit in its shade.
Mm-hmm.
So I want this sport to be here in 20 years.
Okay.
30 years. I might not be shooting then.
Right.
I might not be alive.
Right.
But if we make a decision now, it will affect the future from now.
Fair enough. You've got people you talk to
mm-hmm.
on both sides of the coin.
Yes.
You hear a lot of passion from both sides of the coin.
What coin are we talking about?
The coin of, you know,
what's going on?
What's going on? The current leadership, the people that have all their suggestions over here that may not agree with the current leadership. So you, the coin of, you know, what both sides of what's going on. And now you're wanting to put yourself in a situation to be that mediator.
Yes.
You feel you have that ability to mediate both sides of that?
Yes.
Why?
I've been doing it for years.
Okay. I was getting ready to go back and say that myself. I want to hear, you know, because you've done this. You've taken the 14-year-old gang members to success. You that had no hope. You've taken different things you've done in life to change, up to and including yourself.
Yeah.
It's going to be very exposing.
Absolutely.
And that's one of those things that, you know, your life's pretty much, you know, everybody sees you at the range. You have fun.
Of course.
So that's not an issue. So people that know you that are ROs know that you know the rules.
Mm-hmm.
You at one time, you used to go to the Rangemaster program.
I was. I did go into it. I did not complete it. I got in right when I took a new position.
Yep.
That I had to overhaul a whole program.
Yep.
And it just was not conducive to the RM program at the time. Because that is a very labor-intensive.
There's a lot more to it than people think.
Yes. Yes, it is. And there's a lot of back and forth with your mentor / instructor.
Right.
And it's just, it very time consuming and you have to travel a lot.
Right.
So with your new job, it just wasn't possible. It wasn't.
You just said you communicated with the director and everybody else and just had to step out of the program. Yeah. Do you see yourself getting back in one day? Do you see yourself at a level where you could do that?
Maybe.
You still, because you still enjoy the rules. You still enjoy acting on the rules of what's there and being, making the rules part of the program.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
But you can do a lot more for the rules being on the board than you can as an Army.
Fair enough. You have a good relationship with with Troy?
Yes.
Good. You're in a situation where it's very, you know, are you ready for that adversity to take some of these relationships that may be good and have an understanding that, you know, they may have felt this way for 10 plus years. You've got to overcome some serious objections.
Yeah. But hopefully we can find a more thought out way of bringing about change.
Mm-hmm.
Or if no change happens, you know, why is there no change?
Right.
I'm a very analytical mind, you know,
right.
Science background, engineering. I like building things. I like knowing things.
Right.
I was the kid that took things apart, you know, put it back together.
Right.
How? Let's fix it. And programs, guns,
mm-hmm.
technology.
There's other people out there that have had slogans for running for president and try to be catchy phrases and all this stuff, trying to either one get attention or try to make it something, you know, more than it is. Do you have any kind of slogan out there? Is it just, this is what you get?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I mean, anybody who's met me, what you see is what you get.
Okay.
And some people like me and some people don't.
Right.
But I'm not going to change about it.
How do you try to have a communication with people that don't like you? You're always open for that conversation. Is it just based on people, you know, some people you don't know don't like you, just trying to have an open door policy kind of thing?
I will talk to anyone, anywhere, at any time.
Right.
Unless there's a more pressing issue.
Right. Like
if I'm about to shoot a stage or if I'm sitting on an ARB committee or something like that. But just reach out to me, call me. I don't hide my information.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to get a hold of me.
Right.
If I don't answer the phone, leave me a voicemail, send me a text.
Very cool. Very cool. What, any other things that we haven't discussed that you bring to the table for running for USPSA president that you can think of?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay.
I mean, we've talked about a lot of things.
We have. But I wanted people to know what I know. I learned some stuff today as well, because there's a lot more to you than colorful jerseys and neon socks to be seen on the range while somebody doesn't say make ready while you're downrange, which makes perfect good sense.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to you than, you know, going to hang out after a match and just being, you know, being there with all the other people having a good time. There's a lot more depth there with the sport and everything else that's going on. So there's a lot more there.
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted people to understand. So, well, good. How can people reach out to you, Luigi, and talk to you about what's going on based on what you're wanting to do with the shooting sports and the future of that? Is there a way people can get in touch with you?
Social media.
Okay.
Name is Lil Bunny Fufu with underscores in between.
Yep.
You can find me, Luigi Lee, on Instagram.
Yep.
Send me an email. It's dvc.luigi@gmail.com.
Okay.
Or just reach out to anybody you know. Hey, does anybody have Luigi's number?
Right.
Most people will have it.
Yes, they do.
So yeah, reach out whenever. I don't mind having discourse. I mean, it's there's two sides to every coin.
Right.
There's three stories to every issue.
Yeah.
Your side, my side, and
perception.
So yeah, I mean, I have no problem talking about it. I have no problem discussing anything.
All right. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
I'm excited to see what's going to happen. I've invested a lot of my time and energy around the USPSA and Steel Challenge, and that's very important to me. You shot a lot of Steel Challenge yourself.
I have.
You're a big advocate for still challenged, and that's been a big thing as well.
I think I'm Area 6 division champ in a few different things for like in the past.
Yep.
But I haven't shot as much of it recently,
right?
Just because I haven't shot a lot of other things recently. Right. I was focused on doing well at World Shoot,
right?
You know, so IDPA was not as much. Steel Challenge was not as much. Negligible 3-gun,
right?
So I might get back into all that stuff.
Yeah, you've done 3-gun in the past as well.
2-time division champ for Area 6.
There you go.
2 different divisions.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff we didn't talk about, but I hope people realize and reach out to you when they have those questions about different stuff that's out there, because that's going to be very important. You know, you're in touch with the shooting sports more than people know.
Shooting is shooting.
Yep.
It doesn't matter what sport or what title's on it.
Very good.
Have gun, we'll shoot.
Very good. We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for watching this episode of Hunter's HD Gold Behind the Lens. Luigi is giving you ways to get in touch with him. If you forget all that, reach out to me at info@huntershdgold.com, and I'll make sure to get the messages to him. But until next time, we'll see you at the range soon. Thank you so much, Luigi.
Thank you.
For a complete written transcript of the Dr. Bill Show, go online to www.icarusmusic.com.
And welcome back to the Dr. Bill Show. Let's go to a caller who seems to be having issues communicating with his girlfriend. Caller?
Yeah, I've had this problem with my girlfriend. She kind of broke up with me. I've been doing everything right. Everything's been going great. We went out. We've gone out for, I don't know, I'd say a good 5-6 months. Everything's good. I mean...
But son, you've got to use communication.
I've done that. I mean, what else can I do? I mean, seriously, I mean, like, I...
Son. Some girls are just bitch.